everybody, and welcome to our latest podcast. We are going to talk a little bit about the economy, a little bit about markets, and what's happening in our industry to finish off with. Today it's me, Duncan Williams, and one of my business partners, John Newsom.
Good morning.
So John, big week this week. We've got inflation figures on Wednesday, and then we've got the interest rate decision on Thursday. It's incredible, isn't it? There are so many people who have got views, including ourselves, I suppose some people would argue, on where inflation's going, where interest rates are going. And I think probably the best way of describing it is that we seem to be muddling.
Yeah, I think the Bank of England will say we're not there quite yet in terms of cutting rates, but we can see that rate cuts are on the horizon, but tantalizingly not yet. So I don't think that a lot has changed. The global economy is, in my view, more inflation prone than it has been for quite some time. And that is a real issue with regard to the cutting of rates, which most people want to believe is just about to happen. But I am not so sure. Well, not if you want to maintain an inflation target. I do believe that ultimately, they will start cutting rates against an inflationary background because the deflation that must really come, they will decide to prop economies up before they'll go for the inflation target. But I think they all find themselves in this position. It's all self-inflicted. They were all printing money. They all said it was transitory. They got it so wrong. And then they were miles too late putting rates up in terms of any form of normalization. So I think the reputation of all central banks is pretty much as low as it can be.
There seem to be pockets of inflation, and it seems to appear and then disappear, etc. And I just think that obviously inflation is an average, and I think that that average is going to be above trend for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, just look at energy prices. Oil prices strengthening again, totally inflationary.
As you say, oil prices have been going up, but we now need more oil to go around the Cape of Good Hope. So it's just one big vicious circle.
It's one big inflationary whack-a-mole, to use a technical phrase.
Well, we'll see what happens on Wednesday morning and on Thursday lunchtime and where we go from here. As you say, I think it's unlikely anything will change this week. And now let's turn to Japan again, which we don't often mention Japan, but it looks as though the Bank of Japan is going to put interest rates up for the first time in 17 years. And what's more, is Japanese interest rates could be positive for the first time in ages, because we've had negative interest rates in Japan for years and years and years.
Well, perhaps just going back to our previous conversation about whack-a-mole inflation, which is if inflation is actually starting to show its face in Japan, then something's up, isn't it? There's something happening there. Yeah. I have actually just booked my holiday for the summer, so I am going. So we will be able to report back with some live reports about what's going on there.
Yes, that'll be very interesting. China has had a stronger start than anticipated, so hopefully that will be good news for the global economy in general, because we don't want China stagnating.
Well, I do think China have major problems. They've got a major banking issue and they've got property woes. Don't forget, it's run by the Communist Party, and communists don't understand free markets. So they've got themselves into a real pickle, trying to avoid the deflation that naturally would come from the aftermath of that. Is, I think ultimately it's going to be inflationary because they won't accept it and they'll start deficit spending, which they already are. I mean, I think stagflation for the next decade is really pretty much, if you had to give it one word, that's what we're probably going to be looking at, which is not a good combination.
No, no. Well, the good news is in this country is that house prices have risen, according to one report this week already. So they're at the most that they've been up in the last 12 months. But where they get these numbers from, who knows?
You know what house prices are like? I mean, they can't go down, can they?
No, no. Okay, let's move on and talk about markets. Two companies which come to mind this week, Boeing and Reckitt Benckiser. Both have been in the news for the wrong reasons. Boeing has had those two MAX 737s, which crashed very sadly, but then it's lost a window more recently. It's also lost another panel. And I think that the big buyers are getting a little bit nervous, wondering what's going on with quality control.
I'm sure Lady Bracknell would have something to say on this, wouldn't she? I mean, to lose one component from an aircraft is unfortunate, but to lose two is probably careless.
Yes. So I wonder whether people will be turning more to, or the buyers will be turning more to Airbus.
Well, perhaps, but it just shows big contracting businesses like that, I think, when something goes wrong, they're not the kind of businesses that we like to buy. And this is an example of that.
Turn to Reckitt-Benckiser, recently lost a court case in the States regarding their infant milk formula.
Obviously, Reckitt is a business that we do own. I think it's just another crazy jury decision coming out of the American legal system. Who knows what will happen? But the statistic that you've just explained shows how bonkers it is. So it's the kind of thing that happens now, especially when you're doing business in the US.
Which Monsanto found with the Roundup issue causing cancer. And I mean, if you look at Bayer's share price, not that it's one which we buy, but Bayer's share price, I think, had been 130 euros and now less than 30 euros, and having had massive claims against it. And I think the thing which I find very strange is that the last time I was in the States, I actually looked at a bottle of Roundup, as you do when you're on holiday, and there's still no risk warning on it saying about the cancer, etc.
Yeah, a terrible acquisition for Bayer. I mean, really, it's destroyed the company, hasn't it?
It does make you wonder whether companies will be more reluctant to do business in the States and perhaps avoid making acquisitions in the States.
But it's another example of mega acquisitions that actually destroy value. But, I mean, there's nothing wrong with acquisitions that make sense. But when you make an acquisition as large as that, you do wonder why Bayer felt the need to do it. And not for the first time, you've seen a business be, if not destroyed, but taken such a value hit by an acquisition that they didn't need to do. And it has caused such value destruction. It should be about, if you're making an acquisition, you don't want it to dilute the quality of what you already have. And I think we could file it as corporate empire building again.
In a completely different vein, you have British American Tobacco, which feels its share price is not performing particularly well due to the fact that it's listed here in the UK. And this weekend, they've denied claims that they're thinking of relisting in the States. And my guess is that with a change of government, possibly on the cards in this country, and Alistair Darling last time, he was suggesting that they had a windfall tax on tobaccos. You never know, we might lose some of our biggest companies to American listings.
Well, I think it's particularly relevant for energy businesses. Why do you need to be listed here? If you look at the ratings of US energy businesses, they're higher. And to date, I haven't heard that there's going to be a windfall tax over there. Not that long ago, Ed Miliband thought that a 75% total tax burden on UK oil production wasn't enough. But then again, if you're a totally unproductive socialist who's never had a real job, you might think that. But the reality is, I think Britain does run the risk that businesses will just say, we'll decamp somewhere else. We don't need to be here.
There's got to be a significant amount of incentive to go out, find the work, do the work, and get paid for it. But if you overtax people, if you overtax oil companies, and 75% sounds quite large to me, why bother? And then we want energy security. That's the last thing that kind of policy is going to achieve.
I don't think Ed Miliband understands that.
Right. Okay, well, let's move on. The week before last was the budget. There was nothing of any huge excitement I saw. Maybe you'll correct me. But they are talking about having a British ISA for £5,000. I mean, my eyes roll at this. Even the politicians are now concerned that the FTSE 100 index, the barometer of the UK economy, has performed appallingly for the last 25 years. And they've come up with some harebrained scheme whereby you can get people to put more money into UK companies, and I haven't seen the finer detail, but that is what is being suggested. And I just can't understand how that is right, really.
It's an act of desperation, I think. Ditto the cut in national insurance. There really wasn't much that Hunt can do. I think all of it is just a sideshow, really.
I'm not quite sure what the definition is here. I don't think they've decided what the definition is, but I personally wouldn't really want to buy a UK company which is solely trading in the UK. There are one or two exceptions, but keep on coming back to this. I want to be in large international companies.
I wouldn't go quite so far as that. I mean, I can think of decent businesses that do a lot of business over here. But what is a British ISA? Are we talking a business that's listed here? Are we talking a business that does, I don't know, 50% of its business here? And then what happens when that changes? The whole definition of it, I think, is way too flaky. And it's an initiative dreamed up, I think, out of desperation because we're in an election year and they've got to come up with something.
My prediction is that it will be pulled and never happens, but let's see. What I would say is that we're at the end of this tax year. Hopefully, everyone who's listening to this has done all their planning for the current tax year and is getting ready for the next tax year. Remember that capital gains tax allowances halve again next year. ISAs are, as we've said time and time again, absolutely critical. 6th of April, you can all put a further £20,000 into ISAs. And for the majority of people, it is appropriate to do that. It's an election year. If there is a change of government, there'll almost certainly be a budget shortly afterwards. And who knows what might happen? They might stop ISAs, they might put a cap on ISAs. But I know for my clients, I want to be subscribing as soon as practically possible.
Yes, absolutely. I can't see that the ISA is going to be extended. I could certainly see that it could well be curtailed or certainly reduced, the ISA allowance. So for most people, it's well worth doing.
So that's it. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. We've talked a little bit about the economy, what's happening with the Bank of England in these coming days. We've also spoken about Boeing's issues and Reckitt Benckiser's issues and what we think people should be doing in the run-up to the end of the tax year, the beginning of the new tax year, especially given there's a possibility of a change of government at some point. There has to be an election during the next tax year, which is probably worth bearing in mind.
This material shouldn't be considered as advice or an investment recommendation. You should consult an advisor regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority prior to making investment decisions. All investments carry a degree of risk. The value of any investment or income received from it can go up as well as down, and you may not get back the amount invested. Information recorded within this podcast was accurate at the time of recording.